Hi everybody, welcome to another episode of Trading Conversations, and I'm your host Philip Teo. You are here, my friend, because you believe that profitable trading is one of the most efficient ways to attain financial freedom and can be achieved as long as you are willing to put in the hard work to develop your trading competency. Our goal with this show is to introduce you to the traders who have dug through the trenches and emerged at the other end. From the sharing of their trading stories, strategies, workflow, and best practices, I hope to help you shorten your learning curve as you embark on your journey towards trading mastery. The upcoming interview you will be listening to is part of the online trading summit that we organized and hosted previously. Possibly Asia's first virtual trading conference, I invited more than 32 global trading experts to share their trading knowledge with more than 25,000 traders from around the world. So sit back and enjoy. Welcome back to Online Trading Summit. In this video, I'll be interviewing Prakash Gaba, one of the top trading TV personality in India. He is a certified financial technician, technical trader, trading mentor, and has appeared on most of the business channels in the country in the past two decades. During my conversation with him, I got Prakash to recall his past decades of trading experiences and even had him sharing about his trading strategy. So if you are keen to learn how Prakash trades, stay tuned for this upcoming video. Hi Prakash, welcome to the Online Trading Summit. How's your day over there?
Hi, good evening to you. It's fantastic. The day is beautiful. Now it's evening here, 8 o'clock in the evening. And there's been a good day today.
Very nice, very nice. And once again, thank you for taking time off to attend this Online Trading Summit to share about your trading journey and trading experience with the many thousands of summit participants who could be listening in or watching in to this particular video. But of course, before we go into the depths of about how you do trading, your trading strategies and stuff like that, I think it would be really important and useful if we can, if I can get you to share a bit about right from the start. Could you still remember the very first time that you came into contact with the financial market? How long ago was that actually, and what was the experience like?
Well, let me tell you something about myself. I've basically been a corporate man. I used to work for a corporate company known as Dalmia Dairy Industries Limited way back in 1978, 79 and 80. I worked there and I climbed up the corporate ladder and did very well for myself. Is there at that point of time, my family needed me, so I joined the family business. The family business of textiles, garments, manufacturing, wholesale, and retail. We did quite well there. And we did very well there, made a lot of money there. But when you make a lot of money, then you're easy with money. So my contact with stock market started then when I had lots of money. I didn't know what to do with the money, started investing in the stock market.
Okay.
And started losing.
I see. So so you had some excess or maybe a lot of excess money. So as usual, when you have money, you don't know what to do with it, then you start investing. So how was that initial experience of investing like? Was it like straight away you make a lot of money, or how was there any story behind that?
Yeah, there's a story behind it. I saw some people bragging about making money from the stock markets. And they would say that I bought this stock and within a week it went up by 50% or 100%, they made money. I sense at that point of time that maybe what I was doing the whole day, hard work and making money, but these guys are making money so easy. So I asked them for tips. They would give me tips. I would buy the stock. Sometimes I would make money. Very good. It was easy. As I started making money, I started investing more of it. I never realized at one point of time that I turned into a gambler. When the stock price came below my cost price, I just held on to it. I had no idea which stock to buy. I had no idea when to buy. I had no idea when to sell. At that point of time, I had zero knowledge about the stock market or anything about fundamental analysis or technical analysis. I went into this business for a couple of years and I started losing money. At that point of time, I realized when people make money, they brag. But when they lose money, they never tell anyone. So I heard some successful stories that dragged me into it, and I got consumed.
I see. So for how many years were you actually in that kind of a vicious cycle of just anyhow buy and invest?
It was around 2 years. Some okay. 90, I think from 98 to 2000, I started investing money. Then I started visiting my broker. Anyone who gave me a tip, I bought it. If suppose person A gave me a tip, if it had worked in the past, then I would rely on him for the second tip and the third tip. That never worked. They never gave me wrong tips, I would say that. They were just giving a tip and I was buying and selling. They thought they were good doing it. I lost all money, completely lost money.
Well, was it because it happened that those few years were in a start of a bear market or in a bear market? Or was it like really just a timing issue?
At that point of time, I did not know if it was a bear market or a bull market. Later on, when I studied the subject, I got to know it was in the bear market. When the market was coming down, I was buying and selling, and I was losing money every day. I went to a point where I went to buy medicines for myself.
In what ways? I mean, medicine for what? To cure your stress or to cure?
No. At that time, my age was 47. I was on blood pressure pills. My medicine was over. I went to buy medicine for myself. It costed only 12 rupees. 12 okay. rupees is like 15 cents to a dollar. And I had only 10 rupees.
Oh, so you actually lost almost everything that you didn't even have money to actually buy medicine.
Yeah, for myself, no medicine. I couldn't even afford to buy a medicine for myself.
So the entire family fortune was in a way lost because of the way that you invest. Oh my God, how was that?
We were six of us. My wife, my son, myself, my younger brother, his wife and son. Six of us, and I lost all money.
And was that like considered as the lowest point of your life? I mean, looking back right now?
It couldn't get lower. 10 rupees is like 15 cents to a dollar. Dollar is 70 rupees today.
Okay.
10 rupees, 12 rupees, he asked me, I had only 10. So I went to my younger brother and asked him for 2 rupees. He asked me, what do you want? So I told him I want to buy medicine. He said, I'll get for you. He had only 55 rupees.
I see.
That means between the both of us, we didn't even have a dollar.
Well, okay. Well, the good thing is that at that point in time, I think the only way is to go up already, right? If that's the lowest point.
I think the realization dawned at that point of time that I have to recover myself. And I have to make money. If I can lose money from the markets, I can make money from the markets. That's when I decided to fight back, since I had no option. So I studied the subject.
Okay,
Yeah.
So at that lowest point in your life, you started to think that you should put in more effort to really learn about the markets yourself, I suppose. And that was the start of the point where you really start to learn about the market. So how do you actually go about learning it? Do you like learn from some mentor, or do you like read up books, or do you like just try anyhow ways and means to do it?
I met a person out there. He showed me some charts and he told me, see, this is how you buy and this is how you sell. So I asked him, how do you get this? He says, you get at a particular place a chart. I said, where do you get the software? He said, software is available. Some MetaStock was there. You can buy it. And I said, where do you get the data? He said, you can get this data from so-and-so person. I said, very good. I went and did it. But then I technically challenged. I did not understand how to work on the software. So I retained someone who teach me software. At that point of time, I did not know the difference between technical analysis, nor did I know the difference between fundamental analysis. That person taught me how to use the software MetaStock. And in the process, I learned the subject.
I see.
It was an accident.
Was it expensive at that point in time to actually subscribe to MetaStock, or was it actually free?
No. MetaStock was given free by the data provider, and data was very cheap, some 6,000 rupees.
I see.
Yeah.
So you at the lowest point in time, you probably wouldn't have capital base to start trading or even investing in any useful way, right? So how do you actually first start building up the capital base before you could turn around?
I'm very lucky to have a wife who started a home business. She's a very good cook and she started making sweets. and she started taking orders for the fruits. So she ran the house for a year and a half. We ate bare minimum, just rice and dal. That's it, lentils and dal, rice. That's it, for a year and a half. My younger brother had a business. We were eating with the capital, because there was a bear market. And we went into negative. Negative in the sense we had overdraft facility from the bank loan.
Oh, so that's debts. Okay.
Yes.
And then?
And then it took me around 2 years to 3 years where I dwelled into it. I submerged myself. I stopped contact with the outside world. And I studied the subject for 3 years, 16 to 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I put in the first trade where I made 1.60 rupees per share, bought a particular stock, Reliance, sold Reliance, 100 shares, and made 160 rupees on that trade. And that was purely based on my own analysis and my own trading.
Was that an intraday trade, if you could still remember?
Yes, it is an intraday trade. That is why I made only 1.60 rupees.
So your very first trade after that lowest point of your life was actually profitable. So what kind of strategy at that point in time do you actually start with? I know, I think it should be very different from how the way you trade right now. So, but what was that strategy that you used right for that very first trade?
Interesting. Thanks for asking me this question. Those days, I was a slave of indicators. I would look at an indicator. If an indicator gave a buy signal, I bought. If an indicator got a sell signal, I sold. That was the way I learned. So I was following indicators and I happened to be lucky. Today, I don't follow indicators at all.
Okay. So how, after you got into that first trade, do you like start to feel like, oh, I am a genius trader. I can be a very good trader. Did it set you on a path of complacency again? Or do you?
No. It was a tough journey after that. Absolutely a tough journey. I have to make money, lose money. I was a damn good analyst. No doubt about it. Today also, I'm a damn good analyst. But to be from an analyst to a trader was a different journey. That was a journey of a lifetime, believe it or not. Trading is only about making money. Analysis being right and wrong is there. But those days I was an analyst, I had no idea about trading. So I turned into a trader, it took me years to turn into a trader. It was a tough journey, believe it or not, tough journey.
So how many years did that period of trying to bump around with your analysis and trying to get into trading and really making consistent profits, how long did that period take you?
It was in November 2000 when that happened. That was in November 2000, that's 17 or 18 years back. But thereafter, the journey lasted a few years to be a trader when I realized that trading is only about making money and nothing else. Trading is not about being right. It's not about being wrong. It's about only making money. If you made money, you're a trader. And if you did not make money, you gambled. So that thing came into my mind, that stuck into mind. Thereafter, journey was smooth, absolutely smooth. Over a period of time, I've grown as a trader.
And
to this day, I'm a student.
Was there any like a aha moment that daunted upon you that, hey, I have been doing this all wrong. And now this is like the second stage of enlightenment, right? The first stage was the lowest point. So this is like the second stage where you have done analysis for a few years, but then you realize that trading is a different ballgame altogether. So what was that aha moment that helps you understand that trading is different from analysis and you've got to change your way and the way you trade thereafter?
Yeah, I think there was no aha moment. It was a journey. It was nothing like it happened on one day and enlightenment came in. No. It was a journey. The journey was there. That the only thing is, as an analyst, you still forecasted. But the journey from forecasting to not forecasting, that journey took a while because it's too deep ingrained into our subconscious mind to analyze and to predict. You did predict because I come on channels, come on television, so I have to predict there. But trading is entirely opposite. You don't predict.
So So at that point in time, in like about 20 years back, you were already appearing on television?
Yes, I started. There's one thing and very interesting is when I used to analyze the market. When I analyzed the market, it was all in the mind. So I used to put in a piece of paper. At that point of time, I started to write for a few websites. Just to make a final analysis of my analysis. This is what I wrote. Does the market unfold the way it does? That was my intention, not with the intention of doing anything. So I write for a couple of websites and also on my own website, prakashgawa.com, just to saying that this is what I said. Is it coming true or not? So at that point of time, I think Doordarshan, CNBC, they saw me, they saw my writing and they liked me and they invited me there. That was in 2000. So I was learning at the same time appearing on television since 2001.
Wow. I think. So would you consider that as a lucky break as well? Because I think that actually was the probably the next turning point that propelled you into the publicity, into getting more people to know you, right? So would you consider it as a very lucky moment or period in time for you?
No, I don't think it was lucky. What it was then, those time, 2000, 2001, there were not many technical analysts. Mm. It was an unknown field. So even for channels like CNBC and Doordarshan or NDTV Profit, there are not many people available. So I was one of the few guys happened to be there. So they just picked me up from there. Now you have dime a dozen technical analysts. But those days was one of the very few. They had no choice, but they picked me up. And my predictions happened to be coming true. And they kept on calling me. Then different channels kept on calling me. So this went on. That got me fame. That propelled me to do work harder.
I see. So in the year 2000, 2001, that was actually the dot-com bubble, right? So did it in any way affected the India market as well?
Of course. And 2000, I remember the day, I think it was 6150.69. That was the high on Sensex.
Okay. And what happened?
Hey, they started coming down. That's it. It was down. It was a down. It's total. It was a climatic drop. That's it. And started coming down. Anyone who bought lost money.
And how long did that bear cycle took in India?
2 years.
Two years. So during that 2 years, whenever you go on television, it's really just sell. There's no reason to hold. Is this something of that nature?
I wish I could have said that. But I would say that it was more of trading calls, where you buy some stock some days, you sell some stock some days. So yes, in a way, both ways. You're buying as well as selling. But it was a larger bear market.
Was it already possible to, like, in a way, short the market back then?
Of course. In fact, that's how I started. In fact, it was so bad that the regulators, I remember, they banned shorting. It was banned. I continued to short intraday. I was not allowed to short, but a broker helped me a lot. He told me, these are the list of stocks that you have. You short in the morning, but cover in the evening.
Okay.
So I shorted intraday and started making money for myself. My objective was to make only 500 rupees a day.
Okay.
That would take care of my house.
I see. So at that point in time, in about year 2000, 2001, was the main source of your income really just from your trading itself? Or do you actually started other kinds of business related to this industry already by then?
I migrated from my family business, left completely, never went back there.
Okay.
Completely.
So you just...
My business is trading, only trading.
Or only trading. Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay. So what happened after that, the year 2000, 2001, how did your journey in trading or in your business model about how you run your business change? Was it from then onwards that you start to look at some other business model?
My model has been the same. I'm an advisor. I advise and I trade for myself. This model has still remained the same.
Were you a sub broker at any point in time during those years?
No, I was never a sub broker, never a broker. I never wanted to intervene and make money as something else, as a brokerage firm. No, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to stick to trading, make money trading only.
Okay. And during those point in time, what was, of course, later on, I will touch on what is the main strategy and the methodology you have right now. But in the year 2000, 2001, what was generally the kind of strategy or the way you trade back then?
Those days, like I said earlier, Philip, that I was a slave of indicators. Oh, I knew indicators very well. I knew the indicators, when to use a particular indicator, when not to use a particular indicator, how the indicator is constructed. I knew everything about indicators. Thereafter, as I continued to see the charts, I remember those days I had heard that there are some people who don't look at indicators. I would not believe that. I thought, how is it possible that someone can just look at the chart, not look at the indicator in the trade? But then journey, those days, the journey is there. It takes a lot of time. Today, I don't have to look at indicator because the price itself is a leading indicator. All the indicators are looking at the price. Either they're looking at the high or the low or the combination of flows or the volume. So whatever it is, but they're looking at the price and we look at the indicator. So best is to avoid the indicators and look at the price yourself. So you become an indicator yourself, a unique indicator to yourself itself.
I see. So in about year 2001, you were already shifting from indicators to become a price action trader in a way. Was that about that, the period? No. Then?
I think it was later. It was later. It was okay. Later.
So in year 2000,
2002, 2003,
you were
yeah.
indicator kind of trader.
Yeah.
I see. And how did your...
Something like price as a leading indicator, not indicator as a leading indicator.
I see. And how did your journey evolve beyond that? Because I understand you have both the CMT and the CFTE certification, a destination, right? So when do you actually start taking up the certification for that?
CFT I have. I don't have CMT.
Ah, okay.
I think I have CFT. Yeah.
Okay.
See, what happened was, I got the CFT in 2006. Now, why did I do CFT? That's the reason for it. A lot of people would ask me this question, why did you do CFT? I did CFT to tell myself, you see, everyone thinks that he knows the subject. You ask anyone, he'll tell you he's the best. So I also felt I knew the subject, but someone else had to tell me that I knew the subject. So I appeared for CFT exam just to know to myself that I can tell myself, yes, I know the subject.
I see.
Not to get a job, not to tell any to anyone, just to tell myself, yes, you know the subject very well. It was for that. That was in 2006. I think I was the first CFT in India.
Whoa,
I
really?
Think I was the first.
Okay.
Yes, I think so. There's not many CFTs. There are nobody there. There were few analysts. I was the first CFT in India, I think so. 99.9%.
So is it true that at that point in time, India was still considered like a very, very young and underdeveloped market? And people were mainly still focusing on like all the fundamentals, value investing, that kind of way to
yes.
decide what to buy and sell. And technical is really like the unorthodox method of looking at the market. Was it about that case at a point in time?
Absolutely. I think so. That people believed in fundamentals 100%. They never trusted technical. They thought it was some kind of numbo jumbo. We don't know what he's talking about, support and resistance, some triangle or rectangle, some pennant. They didn't know anything about it. Nobody knew Japanese candlesticks at that point. I'm talking about 2001, 2002, 2003.
Okay.
Nobody knew Japanese candlesticks. Steve Nissen book, no one heard about. No books available. No internet. No YouTube to study.
Wow. Okay. And you literally got to just try your best to self-study in a way by looking at the markets and come up with a certain conclusion yeah. yourself, which end up actually is what the books teach anyway, in a way, right?
Yeah, you learn from the books. They tell you the patterns. You watch the patterns succeed, and you feel, yes, the pattern works. Sometimes the pattern fails. That the books don't tell you. That you learn when you lose money.
I see.
And so sometimes the lessons that I learned costed me a lot of money.
I see. So during that period in time, were your trading strategies mainly still like intraday, or do you actually start to go out into slightly longer time frame like swing trading, position trading of that nature, or do you have like a combination of portfolios based on different time frame strategies?
Those days, I think I used to trade a couple of days sometime. It was something like buy on signal, sell on signal.
Okay.
Those days, early days, buy on signal. If you get a buy signal, you buy. When you get a sell signal, you sell. Stick to the signals and you made the difference.
And were you like actively using things like stop loss and profit targets at that point in time, or it was just in, either you are in or either you are out, that kind of methodology?
No, those days I had a strategy of actually buying with signal and selling at signal. Later on, the profit target came in. The stop loss was there, no doubt.
Hmm.
Stop loss, I used to have that. But sometimes, you know, the mental makeup to stick to the stop loss was not there. You have to make yourself stick. Very strict with yourself, the discipline was lacking. Later in point, you realize the stop loss is your best friend.
Okay. So during those years of discovery between like yeah. 2000, 2006, you were still actually struggling with the discipline part of following your plan and following your stop loss. Am I right to say that?
It's a tough journey. Yes, it takes time. I do not know the time periods, but it was a couple of years where you were still struggling, still making money, losing money, making money. And this was a journey. It was evolving yourself, actually, as a trader.
I see.
That process is a long process.
So was it like between, like, let's say 2000 to 2006, was it already like generally a profitable kind of era for you already? Or were you actually still struggling to break even and stuff like that?
No, no, I was profitable. Certainly, I was profitable. Yes, I
okay.
was profitable.
And
I was profitable. I did well for myself. I mean, my wife had to stop working from home. That way, of course, I was profitable.
I see.
Yeah, profitable.
And so what happened thereafter? After you gotten your, let's say, your CFT, just to prove that you actually understand, and how did your trading evolve thereafter, subsequently?
No. It was, CFT was just an incident that happened at a point of time. The process was still there. Like I would say today also, I'm a student of, I've been here for 17 or 18 years. I'm a student of it. Today also, I'll be too happy to learn from anyone. I'll be too happy to travel anywhere to learn something from someone or meet someone. Just to get. Sometimes you speak to someone and you just get one sentence out that takes care of you.
I see. So yeah. When was the point in your life that you if you think back right now, that you think that, okay, at from that point onward, you roughly already has managed to accomplish all those key necessary competency and skills of a trader. When was that?
I mean, it's been there for a couple of years. But it's never accomplished that you can say, yeah, it's the ultimate. I don't need anything. No, not at all. Yeah, it's the progress. Yeah, I still would love to learn. I would still like to say, I would like to trade and learn until the last year of my life. The moment I close my eyes, I want someone to close my positions.
Okay. I saw from your profile that you were really into like sports and hiking and all those very adventurous things like
yes.
scuba diving and even skydiving. So do you still yes. do all those things nowadays?
Yes, I did that. In fact, I've stopped skiing since last 2 years.
Okay.
Otherwise, I've skied for 45 years.
Wow.
Continuously.
Okay.
I started skiing in 76 when I think skiing was in infancy in the country.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you still do like scuba diving and skydiving?
Yes. Scuba diving, skydiving I did in 2013.
Wow, nice.
I did a static jump on my own. Not piggy bank ride. I like to do everything on my own. You take a ride, jump off. Tough, but jump off. It happens.
So are you still doing sports right now? I think you said you were
yes.
a competitive sportsman, right? And,
yes.
and so do you still play sports nowadays?
In fact, I've been a marksman since 1983 at the national level. I've done 14 national championships and 3 national games. I have stopped competitive sports at this point of time for the last couple of years. But yes, I'm in the management of sports, in the committee, promoting the sport of marksmanship. Yes, I'm still there. I'm very much involved. The sports cannot, you can't take sports out of me. It's part of me.
Okay. So marksman is, are we talking about like shooting? Is that air rifle kind of
yeah.
thing or what?
No, pistols. I'm purely a pistol shooter.
Ah, pistol. So I think that you will be able to continue even if you are into your ages, right?
I can continue, but it takes a lot of time. It's very competitive. I need to spend around 3 to 4 hours a day, at least maybe around 20 hours a week, which I can't afford today.
I see. So looking back, do you think that all these sports that you compete in and the adventurous kind of personality that you have, was it in any way instrumental in sculpturing you into who you are as a trader, as a mentor today?
100%. 100%.
In what
because
ways?
It brings a discipline into you.
Okay. Can you elaborate more on that?
Sports is a discipline. You see, like a bullet. Bullet doesn't have intelligence, let's face it. If you want to send a bullet to a 10, you want to hit a 10, then you have to, it's not a missile, it has no intelligence, it goes directly to 10. You have to send it to 10. To send it to a 10 X-ring, you have to send it from here. And there is the process of involvement. When you fire a shot, it has to go to the 10. And just 1 second or half a second of shot that has components into it that you fire it right, so you actually deliver it to an X-ring. So it's a discipline. It's too precise. That discipline, it's like this. You can shoot a 10 at will. If you can do that, then you're disciplined. That discipline, if you bring into your trading, oh, wow. Then you know when to pull a trigger.
Yeah, exactly. So I was really thinking if you are really good with shooting, then you shouldn't have any problem pulling the trigger in the market as well, right?
That's right.
I see. Okay. So how has your trading evolved if you think back from the point that you start until now? What kind of strategy, or how do you actually look at the market nowadays when you actually trade the market? Have you started to go more longer term, considering that you are like coming to age already and it could be very physically and mentally exhausting to keep doing intraday trades? Do you start to look like longer term time frame as a result, or do you still enjoy doing very short term kind of execution?
I think it's my temperament. I also have lack of patience. I lack patience. So maybe that works better for me, and my mental makeup is more for intraday trading. I like to be in and out of trade within 20, 25 minutes. That's it. 30 minutes at most, 40 minutes. Beyond that, I don't take it. So the time span, attention time span is there. Focus there is there, last there. Earlier, I used to hold it for a couple of days. These days, I don't have to do it. Of course, I must tell you that income that we generate, we put a certain percentage into delivery-based stock where you buy today and maybe sell after 2 years. Who knows? So I also have that trading, but that purely again is on technicals, not on fundamentals. So that is a part of a portfolio that goes into it. Well, a part of thing that is intraday trading, that's your bread and butter. You can make money at the day you want to any markets in the world.
I see. So are you still personally like very active in trading intraday nowadays?
Absolutely. Every day, in and out.
And in your workflow, for example, when you trade intraday, are you like spending the whole day looking at the market for opportunities, or do you just spend, let's say, a first few hours of the day just to execute the trades, and once you are done, okay, I'm done for the rest of the day? How is your workflow like?
Philip, I do around 20 or 21 or 22 shows a week on the business channels. CNBC, okay?
Yes.
So on a day, I do around 3.5 or 4 shows on an average day. So I have shows there. I do those shows. Opportunities may not come at the time when you want it. Opportunities may come whenever it is there, whether you're doing a show online, on air, or you're off air. It doesn't matter. But when I keep watching the market on a screen, and if I am doing a show, and if I see an opportunity, I take a trade.
Using your mobile phone?
No, on my laptop.
Okay. I see. Because anyway, when you are doing the show, you need to look at the market real time as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Charts are there real time, very efficient. You just have to click a button. That's it.
I see. So if you do not mind expanding a bit more on that, what is the kind of methodology you currently use right now for the biggest part of your strategy?
I will tell you what, like I said earlier, I used to be amazed at how people used to not look at indicators and trade. Today, I don't look at indicators, because what happens is you yourself have become an indicator. You can feel the momentum inside you, inside your skin, into the bones. When that happens, you're part of the chart. If the chart is, if the price is going up, you can feel that within you. That's where you take a trade. It takes time. It is not easy. It takes time. A simple methodology like this: buy when it's going up. When do you sell? When it stops going up. How difficult it is? Not difficult at all.
So is it like based on some kind of a breakout strategy, or is it based on a reversal strategy, or you actually use a combination of all of this?
Maybe it's breakout inside the mind. I don't know, but breakouts happens only at a point of time when it actually breaks out. But you can feel that momentum before the breakout. So why do you wait for breakout? Breakout gives you a confirmation. Why wait for confirmation? So if you can feel the momentum inside you, you buy.
I see. So you could.
And when you see the slackness of a momentum, you sell. And after you sell, if it goes up to hell with it, who cares?
Okay.
You got your money.
I see. So let's say, for example, you see that the momentum is coming in. Even before it breaks out, you could potentially get into a trade, right?
And absolutely.
And how, if that's the case, then how, for example, would you actually determine a stop loss? Is there a methodology to how you decide on a stop loss?
Okay, I'll tell you what. Stop loss, how do you determine a stop loss? It's not a system or a methodology. Stop loss is the place where you know you're wrong.
Good point.
At point of time where you feel you're wrong, it's not working out, you're out. That's it. When you're taking in a trade, when your inside tells you to take a trade, your inside will tell you this is not working out, you're out. Why do you have to wait for the stop loss to work out? Just out.
So is that in a way kind of, I mean, at least to you, is it kind of a very instinctive kind of things to do right now? It's not like based on a certain, I must see this, then I will get out or I will have a stop loss. But when I see something is not going right, then my gut instinct just tells me I should get out and I will just get out from there.
I wouldn't say, Philip, that it's guts. No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that. It would be wrong to say that. But you can feel that momentum inside you, inside your skin. Like I said, you become an indicator which is unique to yourself. What do you do that? You go into that zone.
So is it a bit like how George Soros decided to get out of a trade when he has a backache? Have you heard of this story before?
I haven't read his book. I would like to read. Okay. I haven't read his book. I wouldn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. So, based on some interview he has did before, he said that he will actually get out of a $1 billion trade if he feels like there's back pain in his back. Because whenever he has back pains, he feels that his body is trying to tell him that he's either taking excessive risk on a particular trade or that trade is about to go wrong. So he will just get out as a result of that. So I think it's a bit similar to maybe the way that you look at taking risk off the table and stuff like that. All right, so cool.
Possible. Okay, possibly something like that must be working. But you can feel that instinct inside you. You can see it inside you.
I see. And so let's say that you see that a momentum is building up. You decide to get into a particular stock, for example. How do you actually establish or determine how many shares to buy? Do you have a systematic way of deciding how to size the position and stuff like that?
Absolutely. The risk has to be limited. I mean, what happens is one thing for sure. The profit is not in your hands. Loss is. I decide my loss. Profit is, I don't decide my profit. So I don't want to lose a particular amount. So you do certainly do a position sizing. Earlier, we used to do mathematically and decide the position sizing. Today, you don't do that. You know the approximate size that I will take around this much stock. And you buy that. So you know approximately how much you're going to lose, you lose. So it's an approximation. But yes, to do position sizing. Without position sizing, I would not do it. Because I know I don't want to lose much, as much as I don't mind making less money. I don't mind not making money, but certainly I don't want to lose because only loss is in my hands. I have the capacity to control my losses. I don't have a capacity to control my profits.
I see. So typically, if let's say you got into a trade and it triggered your stop loss and you decide to get out or whatever reason, typically how many percent do you lose in a single trade when a stop loss is being hit?
Very good. I have a trading capital. I don't mind using 2% per trading capital a trade.
So it's a max.
That's the reference point I have. Because what happens is with 2%, you can't be going wrong 50 times in a row to be out of business.
Yes, exactly. And do you adjust these 2%, sometimes higher, sometimes lower on that, any kind of factors?
No, I stick to my 2%.
Okay, so you just have a fixed 2% and you will just stick to it.
My capital may go up, so 2% also goes up.
Okay, so it's still a 2% of a bigger base, right? So it's still 2% actually.
Correct.
But absolute value, you'll be risking more in terms of absolute value. Am I right to say that?
Yeah.
I see.
Absolutely correct.
And typically, what is the maximum number of open positions you might have at any point in time?
Earlier, I used to have 3 and 4. These days, I just stick to 1 or 2. I trade 2 vehicles. I may have a position in vehicle A. I'll be with it. If I get a position opportunity in vehicle B, I may take that as well. So I may have 2 stocks to monitor at my screen. I would do that. I don't want to do more than 2.
What do you mean by vehicles? Is it different instruments or different stocks or what?
Different stocks or different instruments? Yeah, 2.
So considering that you have been pretty profitable in terms of your trading, have you ever at any point in time, or maybe if I'm wrong, have you ever at any point in time thought about like starting a fund and manage money instead of just trading your own money or going to TV shows and stuff like that, or even having your current business model now, which is having the research of the trading course and stuff like that? Have you ever thought about managing money?
2 things. A, I love doing shows. Love it. I love doing shows for the fame of it.
For the fame of
it's
it.
It's the fame. I love doing shows. And I've been used to doing shows for around 17 or 18 years. So I love doing that. Now, managing money, I would not want to do that.
Why?
At all. Not managing money, not opening a brokerage, not even a sub-broker, nothing. I would like to trade myself as a trader. I would like to die, close my eyes, saying that Prakash Gaba was a trader.
Okay, so even managing money, you're actually trading, right? But you're just trading other people's money on top of your money. Why didn't you consider that?
Very simple. You know, there are regulations there. It takes away your time into regulations. I don't want to do that. I just want to be a trader.
Okay.
Myself, my own money. I'm not responsible to anyone, not accountable to anyone. Full stop, that kind of thing.
Hasn't like your close friends, relative, like beg you, Prakash, can you please manage my money and trade my money for me? Otherwise, I will just end up losing my money in the market. So do you ever thought about maybe just helping your friends and families to do it at least?
I do tell them to just, I recommend few funds to them. Yes, I do that. That happens all the time. Sometimes my friend families are there. I tell them to stocks that they should buy, which I buy for myself in my own investment portfolio. But intraday trading is too personalized. It's too personalized. Anyone cannot succeed in intraday. It takes a time. There's a gestation period. How long it differs from person to person. So that's, I would like to be it for myself.
I see. So I think there's a lot of different reasons like why some people just decide to trade money for themselves. Besides that, I think trying to handle the expectations of your investors could be something that could affect your trading psychology and stuff like that as well, right?
Possible. Absolutely correct.
I see.
But why would I want to be responsible, accountable, or answerable to anyone? I'm not answerable to anyone today.
And you just continue to trade as and when you like. There's nothing that you need to meet a certain objective of how many percent to reach. Otherwise, your client will be unhappy with you and stuff like that. And
is making money from other sources. I would not want other sources.
I see. And have you at this point in time started like mentoring and coaching other people to become traders? Or if you did, how long ago did you actually started this journey of sharing your...
I have started it recently.
Oh, just
I've
recently.
Started teaching recently, around since maybe around 6 months. Since February, I guess. I think February, I've started teaching. A lot of people came to me to learn, and I used to avoid doing that. So I've started taking workshops. So I do teach them, certainly. And my students make money on day one.
Okay. How has the experience like in terms of teaching? Because like what you said, doing analysis is very different from doing trading. And even being a successful trader is probably very different from coaching and teaching people as well. Do you feel that the difference between these two?
Oh, it's a beautiful experience. It's an experience where it's more fulfilling when someone tells you that 2 years of my MBA did not get me a job. But thanks to your teaching, I'm making money. I don't need a job.
I see.
Now, I've taught someone on this Sunday. That person, the student of mine, made money yesterday and today. And then they send me a messages. Oh, believe me, it's so satisfying. At least you're giving a vocation to someone. People have been losing money all along, and suddenly they start to make money on day one. So that kind of experience, I don't think I can express what do I say?
Okay.
They say that you've changed my life. It feels nice to hear that.
But at the same time, I mean, making money on day one, I don't know. I personally think that making money on day one might not be the best thing, right? Because it could be a matter of you happen to have the luck for that day, or it could be just a winning streak, and it could negatively affect the psychology of thinking that you are a good trader. I mean, it's good to make money, but I think making money over the long run is a long journey and not just on the day one itself, right? How do you actually reconcile that with your student to help them understand that?
Thank you very much. Well, fortunately, over a period of 17 years, I've realized that the discretion was there. You lose money because of your discretion. Where you reside, oh, is this going to happen? Or will it happen? Should I buy or should I not? The discretion actually... Either you take a trade or you take a larger trade or you fear to take a trade. So if you remove the discretion from a trader, then he takes a trade, he trades fearlessly. So I've devised a method where I feel that you can actually trade based on rules.
Okay.
If your rules criteria is met, you are in business. You take a trade, irrespective of it, whether the trade works out or not. You take a trade. But the rules are such that you're likely to make money on day one.
Okay.
More likely to make money on day one. Some, of course, sometimes the stops could get triggered. Yes. But then losing money or wrong trades is part of the business. It's part of business. You play cricket, you get out. It's part of it.
I see. So is your strategy based on like a high win rate kind of strategy? Like you have 60, 70, or maybe even 80%?
Higher.
And that would also
You take a trade only when it meets your criteria. Don't take a trade. And after you take a trade based on your criteria, your trade could still go wrong because profits are not in your hand. Losses are. So even if you lose, you lose little.
Okay. I see. And I don't know. I actually do have a bit of experience when I was in India last year. I did three workshops over there. I had a chance to interact with the India traders over there, as well as my software engineers are based in India as well. So it seems to me that when I was looking at how the retail traders and investors in India make their trading decisions, it seems like they are in an era where they get very hyped up on like asking people for tips or purchasing tips and buying tips, and they just selectively choose those picks to trade. So that was a bit like how it was in Singapore about 20 years back. So, and I mean, by now, after being in the market for more than 10 years, I realized that even as an analyst previously, I was making technical calls, right? I was telling people, okay, this stock looks like there's a higher chance of going higher. Then the next day, this stock looks like there's a chance of going lower. And I realized that those retail traders end up also just picking whatever calls that they like, and they just trade on that. When essentially my performance, my ability to perform is based on assuming you will take all the trades that I call, because it is based on a law of large number. So do you think that all these retail traders, they are just actually setting themselves for failure over the long run by choosing and picking? Because I realize whenever they pick my calls to buy or sell, they always pick the wrong ones. The one that is the most likely to make money, they decide that, oh, I think it looks too dangerous for me or too fearful for me, I don't want to take it. And they go and choose those that is less likely to be profitable. What's your take on that? Do you experience on that as well?
Exactly. That's when they use the discretion part of it. So you give them a discretion, they go wrong. But if you don't give them a discretion, they're less likely to go wrong. So it's more of that. Besides, all the retail traders, they come with an intention of making money. They don't come with an intention of preserving the capital. You take in a trade not to make money, but you take in a trade to preserve a capital.
I see. So how do you reconcile the way you look at trading and compared to when you go out on television and share with people, okay, I think this trade looks like it's going to go up, profit here, stop loss there.
Yeah.
Knowing that at the end of the day, they will end up still again, pick and choose. And
so you give them all, let them choose what they want to, but you give the best.
Okay.
So even when I go on the television, I may not trade those stocks because there are reasons for it, because I don't want to recommend stocks which I trade myself. So what I give large number of stocks to television, number of times that they gave, I give them the stocks. They can, but to me, I like it. That's why I give. If I didn't like even 70%, I would not give them. I have to like whether the trade works out or not is not important, but I must like, that's important based on my 20 years of experience. If I like a stock, I would recommend.
I see. So you based on your best knowledge and based on what you have observed, you tell them what you think are the best call at that point in time. But yet at the same time, inside your heart, inside your head, you know that they might not be profitable over the long run just doing things like that because they don't have a systematic way of executing a trade, having a stop loss. They might not even take a stop loss based on the stop loss you told them, right? In a
way. Exactly.
Okay. So in a way, your belief is such that this is the best I can do, but how people want to use those knowledge that I share, it is really up to them in a way.
Absolutely. Because besides 20 years of experience, I wouldn't have been able to survive otherwise on the channel.
I see. So how do you think, in a way, would you hope to see a change in the way retail traders look at the market that will make so that the wealth can be more spread out to the majority and the normal folks? Is there any vision inside, or do you think that in the future is something that's likely to change that can help that happen?
I only hope and pray that when you want to learn to ride a bicycle, we make an effort to learn how to ride a bicycle. We make an effort to learn to drive a car. But in trading, people just come in and trade without actually learning it. That I feel hope people realize it, the retail traders realize it, that they must make an effort to learn. It's a long journey. But you, unless you learn, you will lose for sure. So if you want to make money and you make it successful here, you have to learn the trade. Then you learn the tricks of the trade, but first learn the trade. And if you don't know learning, don't trade. It's hard-earned money. So I hope that they realize at one point of time. Let's take it, a doctor takes around 5 years to become a doctor. He takes maybe 2 years to do his MD, and then he becomes a surgeon. Even if after he becomes a surgeon, he becomes an assistant surgeon. And then he becomes a surgeon of his own independent. But doesn't do brain surgery on day one. But these retail traders do that, which I feel is not a fair thing to do.
Mm. So ultimately, actually, education is still the most important thing. Even if you are not learning all the best practices about trading, at least you should learn how to not do all the wrong things.
Absolutely. Without education, there's nothing.
Okay.
If I am where I am today, it's only because of education. If I had not trained myself, do you think you would be interviewing me? Not at all.
I see. So do you think is there any way to spread out this education, this right education in a more scalable way?
I think the important thing is for the person to educate himself. They have to motivate themselves to learn. If I don't want to learn, who can teach me? It's not the classroom levels are not important. I want people to be so motivated that they don't want to give up. They should not never give up. That's all. It's a tough journey. Only when they don't give up, they succeed. Ultimately, there is a fight between persistence and failure. Persistence wins. They don't have to give up. They have to educate themselves. Yes, the trade went wrong. What went wrong in my trade? Analyze the trade. This went wrong. Okay, next time I don't do it.
So how
that kind of persistence has to be there.
I see. So you said your son is a trader as well, right? How long has he actually started learning under your wings today?
Well, interesting thing. My son is an MBA. He used to work. He was a private banker. And in 2010, I suffered a paralytic stroke. I was paralyzed completely on my left hand side.
Oh my God. Okay.
And he gave up his career as a private banker overnight, came to India with me. It's then that he learned the subject from me. I recovered from there.
He was working out of India at that point in time.
He was working in Dubai. Ooh. As a private banker managing around $250 million.
I see. And so right now, have you recovered fully? It seems like you are.
100%.
Wow. That's a fantastic.
I'm a fighter. Recovery. I fight. I'm a fighter.
That is all in the mind?
All in the mind. In fact, I must tell you a little incident.
Yeah.
That at one point of time in the ICU, intensive care unit, the first thought that came to my mind is, oh, I'm paralyzed on my left hand side. I can trade with my right hand.
Okay.
I can survive.
So you were even thinking about trading when you are in the ICU?
I think I can survive. I can trade with my. If I can trade, I can make money. That was it.
I see. But I suppose at your current point in your life right now, I wouldn't think that money is a big issue for you anymore, right?
So not at all.
You are really just doing for the love of trading rather than.
Oh, yeah. If I close my eyes, my family will be taken care of.
I see. I think that's comforting to know at least way or another. So you are really just trading for the passion and the love of it rather than for the sake of the money itself. I see. So do you have any plans to really stop trading and just take a break and go traveling? I mean, if you're traveling, do you still trade?
I don't trade from there. Of course not.
Okay.
But so I do travel. I take a break. I do travel. But I don't want to stop trading. In fact, like I said, if I close my eyes, I want someone to close my positions.
Yeah, in a way, I think it's good as well, because I think even as you retire, you need to get your brain to keep on thinking and working. Otherwise, old people who stop working will end up just going to heaven earlier in a way.
Yes, that's right.
I see. Right. All right. Well, that was a really very nice chat and interview with you. I wish I had more time to chat with you, but the time is coming up. So before we end off today's interview, just wondering if do you have any kind of, based on the journey, the long journey that you have been through, do you have any kinds of words of inspiration for new aspiring traders wanting to learn trading? Do you have any kind of advice for them in order so that they can actually start on the right footing rather than doing all the wrong things and losing their pants like what you did? before they have a chance to even see a daylight in trading. Any advice for them and inspiring words for them?
Yeah, I would say learn the art. Trading is an art by itself. Learn it. Learn it very well and never, never give up. It's so easy. Anyone can do that, but you don't give up. That's it. It's a matter of time. If your efforts are 100% genuine, if your efforts are 100% genuine and you focus well, you will never fail. 100%. Look, I started my career, trading analytic career, at the age of 47. If I can do it at 47, you guys are young. You can start today. You have so many years of head start. I'm 65 today. That's my trading life. Started at 47 until 65. If I can do it, you guys can do it. Just never give up. And study and just never give up. Thank you very much. And thank you, Phillips. That best of wishes for your online carnival.
Yes.
I'm very happy to interact with you.
My best wishes to you as well. Thank you so much again for taking time off to chat with me. I'm sure your experience is going to be very helpful for the participants. So thank you, Prakash. And I hope to have a chance to chat with you again. All right?
Welcome. Pleasure's mine.
Take care. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Trading Conversations. If you'd like to access past and future episodes of this podcast, please head to traderwave.com/podcast to learn more. That's it from me for now, my friends. I'm your host, Philip Teo, and I look forward to have you joining us again in the next episode of Trading Conversations.